Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Konezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, we welcome in our good friend Darren McFarland from the DDC. Darren, what's going on? How are we doing?
Good morning, gents. Hope you had a good weekend.
Hope you did as well. I heard yours might have been spent at a baseball field.
Yeah, I took a shower last night, and about 6 inches of dirt came off of me. So, yeah, we did. Started at 8 o'clock in the morning yesterday and finished up at 8 o'clock last night. So it was a long day, a fun day, but, yeah, makes sleeping a little bit easier.
I would say that it does.
On Sunday night, I can promise you that. It didn't need melatonin last night.
Probably not. No question about it. So, Darren, I asked Joe this question earlier, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well. Obviously, Colorado, I mean, they're just a buzzsaw right now. They're up 3-0 against Edmonton. And whether it's tonight or in Game 5, whenever, I mean, they're going to win this series, and they're going to go to the Stanley Cup Final. Does the way that Colorado has played since they've eliminated the Predators from the playoffs, do you think that changes the way that some of the fan base feels about the disappointment following the Pred season?
I'm glad you asked that, Robbie, because I've literally been thinking the same thing, and I'm going, no one's really talking about this, or no one is talking about this at all in this market. And it should, but the answer is going to be no. It's not going to change anything, I don't think. I think maybe with some, but it should. It should factor in there. I mean, Colorado is legit. I mean, we're watching it play out. They're legit. Yeah, nobody wants to get swept, but guess what? You think Edmonton wants to get swept in a conference final? No. And I'm not saying that they will, but it certainly could happen tonight. It's in Edmonton. Usually, you know, I know Hal Gill has said this many, many times to me during post games. The toughest game is the elimination game, right? The closeout game. That is the toughest game. So you know you're going to get Edmonton's absolute best because everybody knows what's on the line. But it doesn't mean Edmonton's going to win. Colorado could sweep them. Just think about that. In a conference final, is that going to feel good? No. Now, they'll get the kiss of, well, they finally got some, you know, rid of those playoff demons, and they won some rounds, and it was the conference final, so everything will be okay in Edmonton. But as for here, I don't think it's going to soften any blows, but I do think it should count for something. And just to put it in perspective of, hey, you realize you may have lost to the team that may end up making this look easy. By the way, we haven't, you know, there's still a little bit more to go, and we'll see how it all plays out. And then maybe that does change things, Robbie. If they go on and win it all, and let's say they continue to make it somewhat easy the rest of the way, how could it not change your mind a little bit, right? How could it not change things? No matter how mad you were at the end of that series, at the end of the Predators season, no matter how mad you were, no matter what your thoughts have been this whole time, doesn't it change things a little bit? Doesn't it make you step back just a minute and say, oh, well, okay, they went up against the best team in the league and the team that just creamed everybody in the play. By the way, I believe St. Louis was the second best team in the Western Conference, in my mind. And they made it look pretty easy against St. Louis, too. I think St. Louis was good enough to win it all. And they made it look pretty easy against St. Louis. And, you know, Colorado just may make it look a little bit pretty easy the whole entire way. I don't know. Some, Robbie, it will not change their minds. They're dug in. They're set in their ways, and they have their opinions, and that's fine. They're entitled to those opinions. But for others, it may have them take a little pause for a second and say, okay, maybe it's not as bad as I thought.
Yeah, I can see that, but I still think it's – I mean, ultimately, the discussion is like how far are the Preds from – competing at the top. I mean, I think we all knew that Avs are really good, right? And plus, Darren, what it makes me think of is we've talked a little bit about today about, you know, a game that we've mentioned a time or two since January, which is the Titans-Bengals game. And, like, if this happens, I think you also, again, go back to that Arizona game and say, my gosh, just don't completely collapse there. And maybe it's a – I mean, I wouldn't have picked them to beat the Flames, but then think about how different, you know, what a different situation you created for yourself by completely folding against the Coyotes, you know? I mean, you could look at it that way, too.
There's no question, Joe, but I think it goes back to, again, not trying to make excuses, and I know people don't want to hear excuses, and I get it, but it's still a fact. It doesn't matter whether you're looking for excuses or not, or you view it as excuses. Whenever you have one of the best goaltenders in the league, and oh, by the way, it's played out that way because when you are a Vezina finalist, they're telling you, you have one of the top three goalies in the league. You don't think that makes a difference? I mean, yeah, you still should be able to beat Arizona. Look, I was the one beating that drum the most. Like, I don't want to hear it. If you lose to Arizona, and especially in the fashion that they did, you get what you get. But I also think if they would have had their goaltender, things would have been different. I don't think it was going to be good enough to beat Colorado because, again, as you mentioned, Joe, the gap is still there. It's still pretty sizable even with UC Soros. I mean, sizable as in they're still the lesser team. I don't want to make it like the gap is the Grand Canyon. It's not. With UC Soros, you always have a chance because anytime you have the best goaltender, one of the best goaltenders in the league, you have a chance against anyone. But that does factor in. That does matter. And they didn't have him down the stretch, and they lost him for those final two games, and the backups did not come through with good games. They were not good. Let's just call it what it was. They weren't good enough, and that's why one won't be back, and I guess the other one will have every opportunity to be the backup unless he can't prove that he's ready for the next step. I suspect he will be able to, but that wasn't his best either. When you have a lead like that, you have to be able to close out one of the worst teams in the league. So, I mean, I do think, Joe, UC Soros would have changed everything. And, yeah, maybe they would have played Calgary. But I don't know how different it would have been without UC Soros, though. I'm not sure the results. Yeah, they probably don't get swept because Calgary didn't play well in the playoffs. Their goaltender didn't play well in the playoffs, who played well the entire regular season. But, yeah, it would have looked different. But in the end, without UC Soros, this team was just not going to win a playoff series, in my opinion.
Darren McFarland on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Darren, yesterday the Rangers had the Lightning on the ropes, up 2-1 heading into the third period, and then Tampa Bay responded with, I think, maybe their best period of the entire playoffs and really a championship-level effort. So it's 2-1 in that series. Shesterkin's been great so far in that series. What do you make overall of where that's headed between New York and Tampa Bay?
I know. I'll tell you where it's headed, Robbie, and I'll see if I'm just going to be wrong the entire playoffs because I've been going against the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs the entire time, and I've been wrong the entire time because they're the champs for a reason. They just know how to win in these spots, and they've been proving me wrong. I just thought this was the end of the road for Tampa, and it was not going to be their year. Look, three-peating is damn near impossible these days. It's pretty amazing if they still are able to pull this off. So I picked the Rangers to win this series. I still think the Rangers will figure out a way to get it done. But as we saw, as you just mentioned yesterday, it's not going to be easy. Tampa Bay is going to make this a really, really difficult task, especially can you imagine if they get to the three wins and they're trying to get to the elimination game, how difficult that'll be against the Lightning. I think it's destined for seven, but I still believe the Rangers can win this series, and I think they will. I think they're going to win. By God, I'm going to be right eventually, I think. I think I am. As you can tell,
I think you are.
As you can tell, I'm still very confident in my Rangers pick, aren't I? Very confident or not. Yeah, but I'm picking the Rangers.
I did too, and I'm with you. I thought that Tampa Bay had to save their season. It was an incredible third period, but I think they've been outplayed much more of the series, and I think Igor is going to get it done. But we'll see. So we're in the same boat together on that, Darren. I do want to get your thoughts quickly on some college baseball, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, and also the digit seen around the world that belongs to Jordan Beck on his right hand.
Okay, let me just full disclosure. I don't know what you're talking about on the second one. As I told you.
Really?
I don't. I got to get caught up on that, so I don't know.
I'll send you some gifts. But, okay, long story short, Jordan Beck hit the game-tying shot last night, rounded first, and threw up a middle finger. It's funny to say out loud, actually.
As he's running from first to second base, just the middle finger to the center fielder.
Okay. Wow.
Never seen it before.
Well, clearly I'm going to go look at that immediately when this interview is over. Wow. Okay. I actually watched a lot of college baseball over the week. I didn't watch a lot of Tennessee Vanderbilt. I got to see some, but I watched a lot of the other regionals just because it just happened to play in. And when I had the downtime, I was just watching as much of these college baseball games as I could. But I certainly missed that one. And I know Tennessee had to fight to get that win over Tech. But, no, I did not see. Can you give me a little background? Like, why?
We don't know. He just
okay, so there's been no reason why he told him he's number one?
I mean, I guess Jordan Beck's response was, you know, he blacked out. He was kind of caught up in the moment.
Blacked out. Okay.
So he just told him he's number one.
Well, look. I'm here to report that I saw also a lot of baseball on the youth level this weekend, and I did not see that happen. Thank goodness. I did yell at our umpire in the championship game yesterday because they kept throwing back. The catcher kept throwing back to third, our catcher. And they were really, really close plays, and the umpire in the field. And we're on the third base dugout. And he's not even looking at the plate. He's looking down in the ground. And I'm, like, screaming at him, hello, there's a game, and there's plays over here at third base. Could you, like, signal safe or out? Could you do that for me?
Maybe.
Hello, are you here? He's, like, looking down in the ground, and he's, like, covering his mouth. And I'm like, and then the very next play, our catcher does it again, and he makes no call. And I'm telling you, these are bang-bang plays. I mean, it could have gone either way. And I'm losing my – I don't know how I have my voice today. I'm losing my mind. I'm like, hello? Are you going – over here. Come over here. The play is over here. Well, he ended up coming – I felt bad because he wouldn't even come to me. I think he was embarrassed. He went up to one of my assistants later on in the game and said – tell your coach I'm really, really sorry. He goes, I think I was having a heart attack. And wow. I was like, what? He's like, I don't know. But he's like, I think I blacked out.
Wow.
I know. I was like.
It's been an interesting weekend on the baseball field.
I told my coach, I was like, hey, here's an idea. How about you tell us that? We'll, like, bring you a water.
Get you some
help. You know, get your Gatorade. Get your medical attention. Like, say something.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. I've never seen that before. It was the most bizarre thing. And I do remember after getting out of that inning, he did go sit down. And I don't see that either. He went and sat down in a chair.
Jeez.
But at the time, I didn't know what was going on. I mean, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, you know, well, yeah, go sit down. Yeah. Oh, you're tired? Oh, well, thanks, you know. How about we get an umpire that wants to go the whole day? And then I realized, you know, I found out he needed, you know, thought he was having a heart attack. And I'm like, well, say something, man.
We'll get you some help.
We're not like that. I just thought you were ignoring us.
Jeez. Oh, man. Crazy stuff on the baseball field this weekend. Darren McFarland, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Monday morning at 9 o'clock. You can catch him every day here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game, from 10 to 2. Darren, great stuff as always. We'll catch up with you here in about 45 minutes.
Always fun, guys. Thanks.
Absolutely.
I'll send you a gift, Darren. Yes.
Okay. Please do.
I sent you the video.
All right. Thank you, Michelle.
There you go.
Great stuff. We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. I want to throw that question that I asked Darren out to Preds fans. Does Colorado's dominance since the Predator series change the way you feel about the Predators and the end of their season? 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Darren McFarland for joining us in the last segment. I want to ask Preds fans the same question I just asked Darren. Does Colorado's dominance in the Stanley Cup playoffs, even since the Predators series, they dispatched of St. Louis pretty easily. I know it went six games, but they kind of blew one in game five. And now they're up 3-0 in the Western Conference Final with a chance to sweep tonight against Edmonton. Does the dominance of the Avalanche change the way you view the end of the Predator season? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, I throw that question out to you. Colorado is just mowing people down right now. They are a machine. Now, they did just lose Kadri, and by the way, no Evander Kane tonight in game four. He was suspended for his hit from behind on Nazem Kadri into the boards. Pretty dangerous hit there by Evander Kane. Does the way that Colorado has played change the way you feel about the way the Predator season ended just because of how good this Avalanche team is?
No, because I thought they were this good. I mean, I understand they've been awfully impressive, and I maybe agree with Aaron on St. Louis. I mean, I think so far everything they've done, for as great as it's been to see McDavid do what he's done, McDavid and Draisaitl, and it's been fun to see him make this run. I still think that so far the most impressive Colorado has done is handle St. Louis the way they did. And I thought it would be a little bit better series, but Colorado was probably going to win this thing. Still did before they played the Preds. So I don't think it really changes too much about the feeling of everything. Again, I think if you want to go back to me, then you get more upset about the Calgary game. And Darren's right, of course. Saros, even without Saros, you can't do what happened in that game. You can't do it. And even with Saros out, you know, the extent to which the Preds were dominated for stretches of that series, I think to me, it's about the question we constantly ask: how close is this team to the top? How close is this team to competing?
Yeah.
Even take the Saros thing out of it. Ingram almost stole game two. And other than that, you know, Saros might win him a game at home, but there's a pretty big gap right now. And that's, to me, the main thing to talk about is how far away the Preds are and whether they can actually get there realistically with this core.
615-737-1025 on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Craig texting in says, it doesn't make me feel better. Colorado is dominated. If anything, it makes me feel like the gap is larger than I thought and the game might have passed Poile more than I thought. This coming from Craig on the text line. So Craig taking the opposite approach, saying maybe it makes him feel a little worse about the way the Predator season ended because of the gap being so large.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't tell you how to feel. So if that's how you feel, that's how you feel, you know? But again, I think no one should be surprised by what Colorado's doing, you know, being on the verge of the Stanley Cup final. I mean, I figured after last year, it was going to be, you know, that's a necessary step, and it's kind of like, yeah, maybe like Tampa Bay against Columbus in 3 years ago, or maybe they just don't have it. And we were going to find out in the postseason. We talked about them maybe being vulnerable, right? Catch them early. You know, they've got all the pressure of, you know, can you guys actually do it in summer, or, you know, in the late spring when it counts? But I mean, we've known all year how good they are. I mean, they are just a magnificent team, and a few guys that just. A couple guys in particular. No, very few teams have those guys.
Yeah, no question about it. Gentry on the text line says, nothing changes now until there's a Forsberg resolution. We don't get some badge of honor for getting swept by a buzzsaw. It's a gauge for sure, but if we don't re-sign Forsberg, then we're even further away than we are right now. That's coming from Gentry on the text line. I mean, I think it's hard to argue with that. Like, if Forsberg doesn't re-sign, the gap that's now presently there between you and the Avalanche, which, by the way, is going to change. Like, the Avalanche are not going to be the same caliber of team next year as they are this year, just based on the salary cap. Like, they're going to lose some guys because there's no way they're going to be able to afford all the pieces that they have. I think they know that. That's part of why this year is so important for them. But there's certainly a gap, and a sizable one at that, no question about it. And if you lose Forsberg, whether it's the Avalanche or you want to toss the Blues in there or the Wild or whoever in the Western Conference, that gap does nothing but get bigger if you lose Forsberg and there's not an adequate replacement for him.
Yeah. Yeah. No matter how you feel right now about this or everything, like how you feel is going to be impacted pretty significantly in the next, I guess it's 5 weeks, right? Yep. We're looking at 5 weeks until free agency starts. So 5 week deadline for me, you know, for Poile to realistically get him signed. I mean, if he goes to free agency, what's your percentage chance that he actually then comes back around and signs with the Preds?
If he goes to free agency, oh, I'd put it less than 5%. Like, I don't understand.
He's basically gone.
Yeah, like,
why would you do that?
It doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know how you get to the point unless he just gets out there and there's nobody
right
close to where. But that's not going to happen with Philip Forsberg. Like, somebody's going to be out there willing to give Philip Forsberg some money.
Well, it's not going to happen unless he has a wholly unrealistic number in mind.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I guess that's possible.
Sure. But it could be.
Yeah.
Nate on the text line says, Colorado dominating does not change the way I think about the Preds, because the Preds fighting to be in the playoffs tells me the organization thought they had a legitimate chance when they obviously didn't. This is coming from Nate on the text line.
Yeah. Well, again, look, I'll take up on Willie's side here. Like, you know, I think that this was a year, this was a transitional year per the plan, right? This is a transitional year. Yes, you want to make the playoffs, but I mean, Poile did use these, whatever weird term you want to go with, competitive rebuild, or what was the other one?
Competitive reset. Transition.
Transition. Yeah, yeah, sure. Whatever. You know, like he did use, I mean, when you use that term, that tells you there may be a bit of a step here, going younger, all that stuff. So, I mean, I don't think the Preds went into the season. Take away the outside expectations, which clearly were overwhelmingly that they would make the playoffs, other than really smart people who are obviously hockey geniuses who picked them to make the playoffs.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, even the internally, expectations, I don't think they thought they had a chance to, like, win the cup this year. I don't think that's true. Now, clearly, they think that this core has a chance to get there with the right moves. And clearly, ownership thinks David Poile is the guy to make those moves. So, we'll see. But, I mean, this year, getting to the playoffs was an achievement relative to expectations. And expectations do matter when you're judging a team.
Jeff on the text line says, no, what Colorado is doing doesn't make me feel better about the Preds. That's loser mentality. If anything, it just puts a finer point on the gap between the Preds and the elite teams in the league. This coming from Jeff in Kingston Springs. So, Joe, I think what we've learned in this little experiment here is that, no, Predators fans do not feel better that Colorado is mowing through people in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I think they're on. I'm with them. Although Josh in Whitehouse says the Preds may have had a bad playoff series, but it's still not as bad as Joe's Wi-Fi. Wait a minute. Isn't my hotspot working well?
It is now. Start of this segment is a little glitchy, but it's all good now.
Ah, dang it. Well, we better hope that the Vols Super Regional is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and not a Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So we're going to have some guys. I think I'm in the same place, so
tell
problematic.
Upgrade their internet package, for God's sake.
I'm going to send a complaint to the very upper reaches of this hotel chain. I basically own partial, like 20% of its stock at this point.
Coming up next, we'll be joined. We'll play our conversation from Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel. Get his thoughts on Tennessee as they advance into super regional play coming up against Notre Dame. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We were joined earlier in the show by Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel to get his thoughts on the Vols as they now advance to the Super Regional against Notre Dame. Wild weekend in the Knoxville Regional. Here's what Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel had to say. Vols win the regional, advance to the Super Regional to take on Notre Dame. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Mike, what's going on? What was it like seeing Joe Rexroad in person last night?
You know, seeing Joe Rexroad in person is just one of those things that it's hard to describe that people haven't experienced it, you know? It's not quite life-changing, but life-shifting, maybe, is the best word.
Yeah, sorry that I flipped you off when I walked in the press box.
That's okay. You've done worse.
Hey, that was not the only bird that was taking place out there last night, for sure. Mike, what did you make of this weekend for Tennessee, particularly the game last night? You're down 4-3 heading into the top of the ninth, and then the bats come alive. I think pretty clear Tennessee is not afraid of the big moments.
Yeah, you know, I took kind of a similar theme from the final two games of the regional, which is this team is okay playing from behind, and it kind of takes a pretty much a perfect performance from the other team. I mean, Tennessee didn't play very well last night, multiple mistakes in the field, just really, really poor execution offensively for about eight innings, but you make a couple mistakes, and then Tennessee piles on a whole bunch of runs really quickly. So it was a different formula, I guess, but you saw a lot of guys like Will Mabry, Kirby Connell step up, get that done. But yeah, that was kind of what I left with, was just being interested in seeing them trail by four early twice and both times finding a way to come back and win.
Yeah, maybe, you know, you build a 6-0 lead, 8-0 lead, something like that. Maybe you hold them off, but I did think, Mike, last night that Georgia Tech had a few other chances to add on. Will Mabry was, you know, clutch, especially coming right in with two on. I think two on and one out, or definitely two on. Got out of that jam. He was huge. Kirby Connell was huge, figuratively. You know, I feel like this team just has so many different ways it can beat you. But do you feel like, I guess, the overall performance was concerning at all as we look forward now?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the starting pitching left something to be desired this weekend. I mean, Dolander wasn't himself necessarily against Campbell, which is a good hitting team. I think they fouled off 24 of his 70 pitches, and not necessarily all with two strikes, but they were kind of right there throughout that performance. Drew Beam had couple good innings last night, but Georgia Tech found a way to get to him as well. And yeah, I think you want to see more out of that group in particular. You know, Tennessee is, the players have talked about, you know, four aces in this, but it hasn't really been that in a little while, I don't think. Blade Tidwell certainly pitched like one this weekend. Dolander has almost the entire season. This was probably his worst start, if not his worst start, definitely since Baylor in early March. So that left something to be desired, and that's been such a backbone of this team. But then you counter it and say, well, the bullpen proved itself for being how strong that is this weekend when you talk about Mabry and Connell. So pitching staff as a whole still got it done, but you're going to need to see those starters be more effective and efficient moving forward in this tournament.
Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel on with us here on Robbie and Rextro. So, Mike, to me, it's so much fun to watch Drew Gilbert attack the baseball in the box. I mean, that guy just, he swings out of his shoes sometimes. How important is he, not just from obviously the production on the field, but in terms of kind of like a heart and soul guy for this Tennessee team? How important is Drew Gilbert in that regard, do you think?
Yeah, heart and soul is the exact phrase I'd use. I think I might have used it on Twitter last week in Hoover or something like that. But that is exactly what it is. He's a guy that, you know, he's that classic line, oh, you love him if he's on your team, hate him if he's on the other team. And you see how Tennessee players respond to him. And I think he just naturally brings people along by being who he is and how competitive he is. But I also think he physically does that too, just with the way that people are going to respond to who he is. That's kind of how he's always been, just this little power pack of energy and leadership that really, really affects everyone around him. And I think you do see that. And I think you saw last night, after Christian Moore had that pinch hit single the ninth, Evan Russell came up with another single. Those guys came over to the dugout as Georgia Tech made a pitching change, and Gilbert's the first one out of the dugout looking to celebrate with those guys. So I think you see that attitude kind of permeate everyone.
Yeah, like, I don't think anyone at this point really wants to be compared to Lenny Dykstra. But I mean, that is who I think of on the field, you know, and obviously the size has something to do with that, but I feel like he's going to be that kind of player, just again, that kind of baseball player in the majors. You know, I think he's just going to be – he is – I think you said it last night as we were leaving the stadium. He's like a – what was your line? Like he's like an assassin when he gets between the lines, like this nice, quiet kid outside the lines, and then just an absolute killer when he's on the field. But, Mike, I wanted to ask you – go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't remember the exact line. I've got too many good ones, but that is exactly it. I mean, people talk about just how crazy he is on the field. It's like he puts on this uniform and just morphs. But when you get him away from the field, you're like, he's this polite, mild-mannered, generous person. But, yeah, once he gets between those lines, I wouldn't want to be near him.
You're just a regular Bill Shakespeare over here, Michael. I did have a question. So my question on Evan Russell, because I think what lost in everything last night was the fact that he's in the lineup and he's, I thought was really good, you know, behind the plate, made some key plays. He's so important, of course, you know, just in that role. But then obviously the big hit in the ninth inning. What's your sense for where he goes from here? And also just wanted to get your analysis of the ridiculousness of that whole situation this weekend. I know that not just the Arkansas guy, but there were some other folks in media who were not impressive here.
Yeah, I think you can kind of see that the coaches obviously felt good about where Evan Russell is, because I don't think you're putting a catcher in the game and starting a catcher of all positions if they're not ready to rock. And certainly Evan's dad put out on social media some anxiety, stress, and pressure. And, I mean, mental health talked about a lot these days, as it should be. It's a very important thing. If someone's dealing with something, it needs to be addressed and not brushed under the rug. And, you know, Evan wasn't available Friday, wasn't at the ballpark for at least the majority of Friday, from my understanding, if not the whole game. That's important. That needs to be dealt with. And if that's what's going on with someone, then it's good that was brought up, brought to light, and handled. And obviously, Evan settled back into where he is and was able to play. But, yeah, what I thought was really bad was obviously the commentary on ESPN and also the rush to – and this is a journalistic thing in general – a rush to scoop and put out what's going on above the person at a time, I think. Kind of caught wind a little bit Friday of more or less what was going on. And I think in that moment, when you know that someone's dealing with something mental health related, you kind of have to be a human in that moment and not rush to speculate about how long someone might be out for or what's going on. And yeah, I thought that was rough. I think it's important in this industry for all of us that we maintain our humanity. And when you talk about mental health, that's probably the biggest time to do it.
Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Mike, lots of reaction this morning to Jordan Beck rounding first base, heading to second after the big hit in the ninth with the one-fingered victory salute to the outfield as well. When did you see that, and what is your reaction to it? Is it a big deal? Is it no deal? Because Tennessee fans are loving it right now, and a lot of Vandy and Arkansas fans that I see on Twitter, not so much.
Yeah, you know, once he hit that ball, it sent my work moment into a tailspin. So I didn't catch wind right away, but I did see it start to circulate Twitter later on in the ninth inning. And, you know, Jordan Beck, I think he had a different walk-up song every day of the week for the weekend. I think his Friday night one is a song with those birds flying high. So I feel like he's been telling us all season that this was coming. And we probably should have paid closer attention to reading between the lines of that song. One of his other ones is one of the Lion King songs. So we also could see some interesting stuff there as well, I suppose. But, yeah, I mean, we've seen who this team is. We've seen that they play this villain role. They love playing this villain role. They really embrace it. It's a us versus everyone, hate us or love us, whatever, we don't care attitude. And that's just another moment reflecting that. You know, it's not great. It's not the best look, but it's, you know, as Beck said after the game, I just kind of blacked out and celebrating kind of thing. And yeah, that's who this team is. They don't really care what you think about them. And they've kind of taken that on for two seasons now, basically since Drew Gilbert flipped his bat against Georgia Southern two seasons ago. It's kind of been their thing, and they haven't really shied away from it. And last night kind of took it to a different level, I guess.
Well, if the song was Birds, I mean, next time I expect him to be running with both, because I was told it was the double bird at first. I was like, no, he's actually still using that left arm to run while flipping off. I mean, flipping off whoever. Was he flipping off? This is something you need to dig in this week, Mike, as you get into the preview of the Super Regional. Was he flipping off the actual center fielder or just like, you know, who? Yeah, I mean, it could be so many possibilities here.
There are a lot of possibilities. I'm not sure we're ever going to fully get to the bottom of that one, but it could just be one of those beautiful secrets that just lives on in Tennessee baseball lore if this team goes on to win a national championship.
Yes, it will.
It very well could. Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Mike, great stuff as always. Thanks for getting up early to hang with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
There are no people I'd rather talk to on this little sleep than you guys.
I'm sure that's the case. Mike, great stuff, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, anytime.
Mike Wilson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Mike Wilson for the Knoxville News Sentinel for joining us in the last segment. Very interesting game last night in Knoxville in the Knoxville Regional. As Tennessee takes down Georgia Tech, they'll take on Notre Dame coming up in the Super Regional. And a very popular topic of conversation on Twitter, on Vol Twitter this morning, is Jordan Beck's one-fingered victory salute as he ties up the game last night. Josh from White House on the text line says, "I feel the one-finger wave was unnecessary and unprofessional, but you can't help but laugh. It's like when your kid does something wrong, but you laugh internally while outwardly correcting them." It's coming from Josh from White House on the text line.
I think that's a good way to put it. I'm currently embroiled in several conversations back and forth on Twitter with the Vanderbilt fans right now who, you know, are making this out to be the crime of the century. I'll tell a little story real quick, and hopefully my Wi-Fi cuts out for this story. But if it doesn't, you're going to have to hear it.
Okay.
I was actually going to mention this during the Rex rant. So when I was Jordan Beck's age, I was in college and playing some softball teams, some intramural softball teams. So one of my good friends, I won't give you his full name, but his nickname is Leb.
Okay.
He has like this weird patch of hair on his back. Okay. And so our softball team's name was Leb's Patch. Okay. And so every once in a while, we'd play on this field sometimes. There'd be traffic going by. And every once in a while, we'd do like an ass out outfield. Okay, which you can kind of I mean, I think that description tells enough. Okay, did the Wi-Fi cut out? I hope so.
Nope.
Wild Rex Road.
So, point being, you do also have to keep in mind the dude is 21. Again, I'm not condoning it. I would not want my players to do it. I think he should have probably apologized. I think someone probably will this week. But he's a 21-year-old dude in a highly emotional situation. Look, it's a new one. It's a new one on all of us.
Yes, it
Throwing
is.
Throwing up the bird in the middle of a play. I mean, hey. But I do think of that. Like, whenever we get too, I guess, critical of college athletes, I think back to when I was that age, and it's like, you want to talk about idiots? Let me tell you some stories. So, yeah, I have a little bit of sympathy. And I think people are going, wait, like, you know, again, these conversations I'm having with Vanderbilt fans, it's like, it is absolute classlessness from top down. Okay, Vitello screams at umps, for sure. And there are times that he's gone back and forth with the opponent. But what else is there? I mean, I feel like some people who, and this doesn't apply to Vanderbilt fans, because Vanderbilt fans who are very into college baseball, watch it. This is a kind of an in-your-face sport, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, there's like when Vanderbilt has a huge play, you know, they do the stomp on the plate and all this stuff. I mean, Kamar Rocker, who was an absolute joy to watch and cover, I've seen that guy absolutely throw out some scorching F-bombs at the opponent after striking somebody out, okay? I mean, these things happen.
In every game.
Yeah, no question. So people scream that word all the time. It is a little different when you take it to sign language. You know, I mean, it's universally understood what you're saying, I guess.
In the middle of the play.
Joe, just be happy that you didn't have social media back then. Your cheeks would have been all over the internet.
Our team was cheeks, by the way, in more ways than one. That's but right. Yeah. No, believe me. Oh, no. Trust me. In general, I thank my lucky stars all the time. There was no social media back then.
Al on the text line says, just glorifying flipping off players, sashaying to first and bat flips only encourages it. Do we want to see the same Little League World Series? Name any other sport where any of that would be tolerated or happen without repercussions. All of them. Have you ever, like, I don't think people understand this. Go watch a hockey practice. Not even a game. Just go watch a hockey practice and get to a spot where you can listen. I'll just leave it at that. I mean, it's every sport. Now, yeah. Do you want it? Is there a difference between that and throwing up the middle finger? Yeah. Do I condone what Jordan Beck did? No. Am I going to get that bent out of shape about it? No. It was pretty stupid. Probably shouldn't do it again. I'm sure Tennessee will say something about it. But people are acting like that, you know, this should be like a 5-game suspension or something. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, like my thing is I've had to laugh. Like, again, like the whole Vanderbilt thing with the bats and everything. I mean, when Luke Lips is like, inspect. I mean, that's brilliant, man. Yeah. That's like brilliant in the moment. So, again, if you hate them and you're a Vanderbilt fan, you do. Okay. Then you are like, that's classless. That doesn't belong in the sport, all that stuff. Now, if you can step back and objectively look at what Tennessee baseball has done this year, like it's fun. Come on. I mean, most of it is, I think, creative and fun. And, yeah, okay, if you don't like Drew Gilbert's bat flips, then you also get into, well, then don't let him hit a 420-foot rocket off you to right center. But, I mean, this one is different. I mean, I acknowledge that. Like, this does not fall into, like, the creative, you know, category. This is just throwing it up, man. But, yeah, it's
– I just can't get over he did it in the middle of the play. Like, it's – if he would have just stood at first base and did it, I mean, we would have talked about it, obviously. But the fact that he's doing it while running from first to second base, I can't get over that. It's just, it's so incredible.
Like what? Like, you know, it makes me go back. Like, too bad. Like Pontus Aberg didn't throw one up right as he was scoring. Right before he scored against the Ducks. You know, so many missed opportunities to flip off your opponent in the midst of beating them.
You got that texture text back in says it's not practice. It's practice, not national TV. Yes, again, go watch the NBA Finals, go watch the Stanley Cup Finals, go watch the Super Bowl. You will hear certain words every single play if you want to. Every play. It's every play. I promise.
No. Yeah, I mean, yeah. What the finger represents, the word the finger represents, yeah, man. Yeah, it's very loudly and regularly shared. I agree. Like, anybody's like, do you want your kids to do that? Of course not. No. I mean, I don't want kids to
swear. I don't want Jordan Beck doing it, but like he did.
Right.
I just don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm actually really interested to see, you know, where it goes from here. Because, again, it's not a big deal. It's absolutely an eternal gift now that will be used for or against the Vols. But I'm interested. I'm interested to hear. Here's some different takes on this.
I guess the umpire just didn't see it. I guess he's watching the ball. Because I feel like the umpire, had he seen it, probably would have said something. Maybe. I don't know. What do you do as an ump in that situation?
I don't know. I mean, you're not going to call him out, right?
No.
Imagine that.
You throw him out of the game.
Well, I mean, is there anyone who's even going to discuss for a moment a suspension because of this? I've seen some people throw that out there.
I mean, I would be floored if that was the case.
I would, too.
I mean, did Rashawn Golden get suspended after the double bird to the Alabama student section? I don't think so.
No. That actually turned out to be – I know we have to go now, but another funny thing about that is that turned out to be kind of a nice diversion for Butch because he was about to be fired. And there was like the planes before the game, like, keep Butch Jones in Knoxville and stuff like that. And so it turned out like he was able to be like, well, you know, Rashawn wants to apologize. And that gave him like something else to talk about. In this case, Tony Vitello would probably rather everybody just talk about baseball. But, hey – you know, he threw it up to the air, man. I mean, you got to kind of laugh at this, right?
Dave on the text line says they should have dinger sellies in baseball like hockey goals. Just let them go with it. Let them get creative with it a little bit. Just maybe avoid the bird, or certainly the double bird.
If Jordan Beck's sliding into third and a close play and he's got double birds up while he slides, then we'll reach a new level of excellence.
Oh, man. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex. We spent a lot of time today talking about a middle finger. It was unbelievable. Jordan Beck,
show is for the bird.
The balls are the gift that keeps on giving. That's going to do it for us. The DDC is coming up next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.